This is Jan Swift, and you're listening to Discover Lafayette, a podcast dedicated to the people and rich culture of Lafayette, the gateway to South Louisiana. We tape in the offices of Raider Solutions, located in the Light Center in Lafayette. Raider offers a complete fleet of IT solutions for businesses of all sizes. If you're wondering if Raider can help your business, please visit RaiderSolutions.com. I'd also like to thank Iberia Bank for its support. Founded in 1887, Iberia Bank is the largest bank based in Louisiana and is headquartered in Lafayette with 325 combined locations throughout the South. They offer the resources of a national bank with the personal touch of a community bank. Please visit IberiaBank.com for more information. And lastly, thank you for the support of Lafayette General Health. As Acadiana's largest nonprofit, community-owned regional health system, Lafayette General Health is committed to restoring, maintaining, and improving health in the communities it serves. For more information, visit LafayetteGeneral.com. Our guest today is Cassie Doyle, a Lafayette native who is becoming well-known for writing feature-length films that successfully make it to television screens. For Christmas 2019, two upcoming movies will premiere on Lifetime, and they're entitled The Road Home for Christmas and Radio Christmas. In 2018, two other Christmas films Cassie wrote aired on Lifetime, A Christmas in Tennessee and A Christmas Contract. A Christmas Contract was filmed right here in Lafayette. Cassie graduated from UL Lafayette in Moving Image Arts. She moved to New York City in 2015 and initially served as an assistant for a small jewelry design company, then as an assistant at A&E Networks, where she made contacts in the industry and started writing movies. She's a member of the Writers Guild and is currently working on some new projects that are not related to the Christmas season. Cassie, welcome to Discover Lafayette.
Thank you for having me.
And let's also welcome my daughter, Taylor Swift, who's
Hello.
One of your closest
She's
friends.
Swift.
I know.
Hi.
From way back. So I wanted this to be kind of a family interview. I've watched you grow up, and I'm so proud of you. And
thanks.
So happy to have you here in the studio. You made
too.
Time while you're here in town. This will air after your mom celebrates her birthday.
Yeah. So I'm secretly in town for my mom's birthday. We're going to surprise her tomorrow, but today I'm laying low.
Yeah. So let's go back in time. So you and Taylor were talking before the show started. You've always liked taping themes, and I know you've been creative. Would you talk about your journey? I know you're a Lafayette High graduate, and what led you to become a film writer?
I think initially it's just having the interest in wanting to film things. We just always had a good time making little movies, and you know, they were silly and stupid, and
wonderful.
Some of them were filmed at your house,
I know.
Jan.
I remember.
And so it just started from there. And in high school, I had a really great teacher. I love her forever, Miss Godshall, Lori Godshall. And I took a creative writing class with her, film as lit class with her, and she was so inspiring. And and the Lafayette High program in general, all of their, like, the arts teachers, the English teachers, everybody was fantastic. And so really, I think, nurtured everybody's desire to follow their dreams and do what they want. And then in college, I went to UL, which was amazing, and majored in moving image arts. And I just always knew I wanted to be in the business. Writing was always the goal. Mm-hmm. I didn't think I'd get there as quickly as I did, which is great. But it's all about contacts. So I moved to New York and just tried to, like, make as many contacts, get a job at a network. You know, I was an assistant, and then just make as many friends as you can. That was sort of my motto. Yeah.
I've got a question. I mean, there's so many talented people there. It really is all about who you know.
Absolutely.
I mean, you have to at least get in the door and then prove yourself.
Exactly.
But
yeah.
You were surrounded by loads of talent.
Well, the saying, like, luck is just opportunity meeting preparation, right? I that couldn't be more true, because as a writer especially, you know, I meet a lot of writers and I say, okay, what are you working on? Like, what are you writing? And they don't have anything. Mm. And so you'd be surprised. It happens a lot. So you have to, you know, no one asked me to write a Christmas movie at all. I just saw a need space. And you guys can see this now. Netflix is doing a ton.
Yeah.
Hallmark does a ton. Lifetime.
Yeah.
The competition is, you know, it's a buyer's market right now. So I was like, I want to capitalize on this. I'm an assistant. I have nights and weekends. So I just was like, I want to write a Christmas movie. And so one day it can get sold. And luckily, the friends that I made were incredible. incredibly supportive, and my boss and everybody I worked with just like tried everything to help me. And
that's great.
And luckily, yeah, you know, they really wanted to buy my scripts. So
is that common for people starting in the business to get a job, just to get your foot in the door, and then you're writing, you were working around the clock?
I don't know if it's common. Mm-hmm. I think people want to do it, but I really would attest that to my coworkers, my boss, everybody I worked with at A&E Networks was absolutely incredible and incredibly supportive, which doesn't always happen. A lot of times in the industry, people don't always support you, and that's sort of
the competitive.
Yeah, the competitive aspect of it. But I think it's getting better. And I mean, everyone I worked with was like just anything they could do to help, and so I'm really incredibly grateful for them. So that's the opportunity coming into play.
Is A&E Networks is Lifetime under them?
I was so looking that up. They have five networks. So it's A&E, History, Lifetime, FYI, and Viceland.
Okay.
So those are all the networks.
Yeah.
So that's how it sort of started. And then
did you learn that at UL? Did you take writing courses for film?
Yeah, I took a few. Yeah. Uh-huh.
So
absolutely.
They train you the format? I'm just curious. Or do you just have to be...
It's a little bit of like... absolutely. Like, I got trained on like how to write a script, but a lot of it I think is self-motivated. You have to read a lot of scripts just to understand the verbiage. There's a lot of like finessing you do when you write a script,
right?
Because you can't really give stage directions, like, or it's a little bit of a dance sometimes.
Yeah,
like how to get your vision across without trying to do the director's job or the actor's job. So a part of it too, like when I first moved to New York, I volunteered at a screenwriting studio. And so like I would work their camera for their podcast, and I would just be able to audit classes. So Smart. So, and you know, that's how you make contacts. That's how you network. That's how you learn. And so that's something I did when I first moved there.
Yeah.
Plus, like, you're just a nice person too. So, I mean, it's not like you're, it helps.
Yeah.
I think being like a nice, smiley person, like not that you need to be, but you're very inviting. So it's not like people are going to be turned off or anything. They're like, she's talented and
individual. That was the greatest part about working at the network. Like, I met so many amazing producers that I work with all the time now. Mm-hmm. And you know, we just like, I'll send them an idea and it's like, we're going back and forth who we can pitch it to. And, so that's also, I feel like I've met so many like incredibly kind people and you know, that's who I don't want to work with, people who aren't kind. So,
but I can tell you both, when you display a work ethic like you did, that's, besides being nice, that is so appealing to people that are looking for partners to work with. You want to see that somebody's in it.
Yeah, yeah,
and they're willing to rework it. I'm sure you have to rework things a lot to get it.
It helps that last year, one of my Christmas movies was the highest rated of the year. And
which
the other one had the most press pickups.
What? So which one was
Christmas
the highest rated?
Christmas in Tennessee was the highest one. I love that movie. It's really
sweet.
Cute.
Yeah.
And Christmas Contract had the most press pickups.
It did?
Yeah. You think because of Lafayette?
Oh,
could that be?
Well, sure.
Yeah.
But I would argue it's a little bit more about the cast.
Right.
There was like the whole One Tree Hill reunion, and everyone was really excited about that.
Are they known?
Yes.
In Lifetime, or just known actors? Huh?
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yeah. So it's like a beloved TV show from when we were like in high school.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And so like a group of them coming back together was made everybody, the internet freaked out for a bit.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
See,
it was
I didn't
fun.
Even pick up on that.
They're
I
the
just
kindest
the
people
movie.
Too. Like they're really cute. One of them was, one of the actresses in that movie is from Eunice.
Hmm.
So I've hung out with her. Her husband is Jensen Ackles from Supernatural.
Oh.
So I've hung out with them a couple times just at like press events and different stuff. And like, talk about the coolest people ever. I was like, you're a Eunice girl through and through. Like you're South Louisiana. I know it.
Yeah, you can tell.
They're good people.
Well, you picked up on love stories, and I know they tend to be set, at least the four so far have been set around the Christmas season. I know we'll watch these two coming up. I think the first one will probably premiere before this airs on October 26th, and the second one airs
November 9th.
Yeah. But do you believe in love? You know?
I do.
Yeah.
Hey. Who doesn't?
I just
There's
smile.
So much love in this room. How can you
I
not
know.
Believe in love?
I always smile when I think of Lifetime love movies because it's just like a predictable kind of good-looking people that have all
people.
These compelling stories. And it doesn't work out, and then you're like, but hopefully they'll either fall in love or there'll be some happy ending.
Yeah, you know?
They're just
yeah.
so much fun to watch.
And that a lot of people, I get that a lot, especially from like my parents. They, you know, sometimes you just want to relax and watch something that's heartwarming, yeah. you know,
put your feet up and,
you know, watching everything else that's going on. And so it's kind of a nice relief. And everyone likes, I mean, Christmas time, I think everyone wants to believe in that, you know, sort of warm and fuzzies.
Yeah.
And watch that kind of warm and fuzzies on your TV. So, yeah.
Right.
And they're fun. They're fun to write.
How do you get selected? How did your scripts, I mean, if you can tell us the process, I know that a lot of people probably submit scripts and only a few are selected. How does that process work once you have your script ready for submission?
So initially, it's a little different because I worked, because I had those contacts. I worked for the network, and I initially wrote the scripts. And what actually happened was I had a professor who lives in New York now, who manager wanted to send it to a rival network. And I was like, I'm not even sure, because when you work for a creative company, you have like certain rights and things like that that you have to sign contractually. And so I was like, I don't even know if I can do that.
Yeah.
Like, and so I had to go to my boss, and this is how it sort of all started. I was like, I don't really know what's going on, like if I can do this or not. And then that's when she was incredibly supportive and was like, please send them to me. And I was like, I don't have a manager, an agent, or anything to send it through. Because usually you're not supposed to do that. But she was like, I'm vouching for you. So that sort of, that was the initial. And again, that's just like making really good friends who want to support you. But the normal way is like, you usually, if you're submitting, you have to go through like a producer or an agent. Or somebody who's who has a relationship with the executive
at
the
network. It's like a chicken and egg. So you have to
Yeah, so it's really hard to get in. Yeah, exactly. And that's sort of why I didn't want to be like, you see a lot of like bartenders, waiters, like that kind of stuff that try to break into the industry. And I just didn't think that was smart. So I was like, I just thought it made more sense to, you know, if I'm not going to be a writer, I can build a career at a network and then try to, you know.
You start ground up and see what happens.
And it works. Yeah. Things are going well.
So is that advice you would give to other hopefuls? I know you interned.
I would
absolutely tell you.
Get
in the door.
I mean, at the end of the day, if you're not like writing, you're still making television. You're a part of television. And it's already, it is hard to get a job at a network. You also have to know people. So like I didn't work, you know, it took me a while to get a job at a network in New York. And I went to a lot of networking events. And so that's how I met somebody that worked at A&E that could put my resume at the top of a list and someone can take a chance on you.
How many were on that list, though? There was a good few.
Yeah, they get it. Yeah, exactly. That's why it's like you have to know somebody.
Yeah.
That's the whole industry. It's it's about making friends. So,
What's your best networking advice, like to a young, you know, man or woman that wants to meet people and make a good impression? I mean, are you bold or do you, you know, did you have advice? Did you make mistakes or did you just hit the door and kind of met the right people?
I think you just have to be like kind and outgoing. I know that's tough for, I'm an extrovert. I think a lot of writers are probably introverts, so that's probably where they would struggle. But just like being kind, trying to make friends, not judging people, you know. I think some people, this especially, you see this in LA, you see a lot of people trying to climb ladders off of other people, and you may underestimate somebody. You may be like, oh, they're just a this, but it's like, no, they're going to rule the world. They're going to run the network one day. So also just like not just being kind to the people you think that can help you, just being kind to everybody. I mean, I think that's just good life advice, but
yeah.
And then you know, you scratch my back, I'll scratch your back. We're all friends, and then you're going to help each other out. So.
Did you ever think that one of your movies would be filmed here in your hometown?
No, but I was so happy that it was. I was so happy. I just want to give a shout out to my producer, Daniel Lewis, on that movie. He's filmed in the area a bit this year as well. He has two movies coming out. If y'all remember, there was a movie filmed this year in New Iberia. So that was his project as well. He's an incredible producer, and he's based and outside New Orleans in that area. And but he films all over the state of South Louisiana mostly. But he's incredible. He does some really good work. And I'm really happy that we got to make Christmas Contract together.
Just as an aside, last Christmas, you know, a lot of your family and friends gathered at your parents' home.
Yeah.
And we had an outdoor screening of A Christmas Contract, and that was just so much fun.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
your dad and your mom were beaming.
Yeah.
Tom and Melanie Doyle. I just don't think I've ever seen prouder parents.
Yeah,
or your family, you know.
Yeah, they're so supportive. Cool. They're so supportive. Yeah. And that was a lot of fun. I think they're also excited too, just because, you know, it was a combination of, you know, their daughter wrote the movie. Mm-hmm. It was set in their hometown.
We've
lived in Lafayette my whole life. And so just a lot of pride from like all sorts of aspects.
Right. And then all the press that it got, as you said.
Yeah, so. Lots of press. It's good.
What other things, I know you can't probably divulge projects that haven't been, you know, contracted yet, but are you looking at expanding outside of the Do You Believe in Love?
Yes, scene? I think my thing really is, I mean, as much as I do think these are really fun to write and enjoyable to write, but I really want to do series. I'm more of like a drama, like 1 hour drama kind of writer. So yeah, I'm repped by Authentic Management. And so we're sort of about to start going out and making meetings and trying to get staffed on a show.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so yeah, we'll see. So that's the next step. Although I think like I love writing these Christmas movies, so like once a year I'll maybe do one. If I can, you know, get traction in the series world, I'd still like to do these movies.
Well, it just sounds like so much fun writing something like that.
Well, series or Christmas?
Christmas. But if you don't mind me saying, speaking of series,
yes.
We once had a little project that you spearheaded called The Millennials. It's about a group of people our age.
I want to toot my own horn for a hot second. This was not a common term at the time. Do you remember that?
It really wasn't, actually.
It was not a thing. Like,
did
nobody
invent that?
No, I did not.
Yeah, Cassie Doyle invented the term Millennials.
I kind of went deep in the internet to find it, because I was sort of like, that's when we were really referred to as Gen Y at the time. Like,
yeah.
So when I was playing with the title of that show, I was like, should it be Why My Generation? Or like, I was trying to find like a catchy thing. And then I like found some deep corner of the internet that was like, sometimes they're referred to as the Millennials.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, I should, that's a good title. And then all of a sudden, everyone's obsessed with complaining about Millennials.
God, but, that was the best.
Where's the script? Do you still have it?
Oh, somewhere, yeah.
You should.
There's a gem.
Oh, yeah. That's a gem that needs to stay in the hard drive.
In the drawer.
Yeah.
I'd say it was a really fun experiment. I mean, I actually also got to be on the show, which was pretty fun.
I know. Taylor Swift played Carrie Underwood.
Yes, I did.
It's like I wrote the role for you or something.
Something like that. Yeah. God, that was so much fun. I mean, it was nerve-wracking just being in front of a camera, but being with friends and doing something that's just... I mean, I know you might not be incredibly proud, but man, that was so much
fun. That was my senior project, too.
Yeah.
That's cool.
There's maybe, what, 2-3 episodes at least?
Yeah, I wrote like 4 episodes and we filmed 2 of them, so
we
that was
We filmed all
fun.
Over UL campus.
Yeah.
I mean, at my parents' house at one point.
I was obsessed with like meta stuff at the time. This is also what's funny about being a writer, because like you look back on old stuff and you're like, what? Why was I so obsessed with that? I was obsessed with meta, so I like... The show was about a bunch of college kids trying to make a show. Like, it was so, I don't know. I look back and I'm like,
kind of like the Seinfeld episode, writing the show,
Yeah, exactly. Oh, so
it sounds like the Jerry Seinfeld plot, though. Just
people
just
about nothing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Gosh.
That was a blast.
So, what do you think's in the next 5 years for you? Do you have goals that you're looking at?
Yeah, absolutely. I would love to. I mean, it's hard to say because I have some things lined up, so I'd love to share, but I don't think I can share them. But I have some really fun stuff coming up, and I'm really excited. Like, 2020 is going to have a lot of exciting new things that I'll be doing, new roles outside of just being a writer as well.
Okay.
And we'll see where, you know, my management could take me. Hopefully in the next 5 years, I'd love to have a few shows staffed. Being staffed on a show just means like somebody else's show.
Okay.
But I'd love to also like have my own show. Like, you call that a creator or showrunner. So I don't know about 5 years. That might be ambitious, but I don't know.
You've done pretty well in the last 5 years.
Yeah.
I mean, so to be
sometimes here. Setting the goal is just like, and then all of a sudden, you know.
Yeah. Are you 27?
I'm 27.
You and Taylor the same age?
Yeah.
So you've done so much in such a short time.
I was getting really, it was like, when I found out that I sold these movies, I was 25. Mm-hmm. And at that time, I was still an assistant. I'd been an assistant for a while in New York, and I was like getting like frustrated. And I was like, oh, like nothing. I was like, I feel like I'm behind, like I'm getting old, and like, I want to like start like doing stuff. And then this happened. And then I was like, okay, okay, we're on track. We're on track.
And then it kind of just snowballed. Yeah. I mean,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
I guess I kind of wonder, so obviously moving to New York in general to be in the scene is helpful, but just moving away in general from Lafayette, Louisiana to a huge city, I mean, the growth, I mean, like, do you think that maybe all people should sort of like move away, or like especially creative types, like moving into a new city, kind of diving in on your own? I mean, that was... That must have been great for you, and overwhelming and terrifying too. But
yeah. You know. I mean, I was like horrifically poor for like a while. Whoever said that like money can't buy happiness has never been horrifically poor, because it can buy some security and some like,
and in New York City.
Peace of mind and like vacations. Like, so I totally don't believe that.
Groceries.
Yeah, it was tough. But it's also like, I think it helps you grow as a person. Mm-hmm. because you have those moments when I was like living in a closet, like basically it was the tiniest room ever, like in a mattress on a floor.
Mm. Didn't you live with your sister though? Didn't you at some point?
Later.
But not originally.
No, not originally.
Oh,
no.
Boy.
So I lived like out in like the middle of nowhere, Queens, in like... it was kind of like a cupboard under the stairs, except for it was above the stairs because it was so small and it was right above the staircase. But yeah, I lived there for a while just to try to get a job and temp and try to figure out, you know, a way in to New York. It's tough. I think I owe a lot of it though to UL. I mean, I absolutely loved going to UL and I had really amazing scholarships. So I came into the workforce with no debt. Yeah. So... and that was sort of something I struggled with when I was choosing my college. I was like, should I go to NYU and be horribly, horribly in debt?
Right.
And then maybe have connections and maybe have internships that I can do in the city? Or should I start off the other way? And I'm obviously very glad that I did the opposite and went in with no debt.
Yeah.
Because... Yeah, it allowed me to live, you know, so horribly poor.
Yeah, not way down.
Yeah, it wasn't like another thing I was worried about when I was living in the cupboard above the stairs. Absolutely. Aside from just like loving UL, like I found a new love of Lafayette when I went to UL, especially.
That's
I already
a different
loved
side
it.
Of it. Yeah, it's interesting.
It is. It's a very different side. You hang out at this side of town more, which is, you know, I lived in the St. Streets, went downtown all the time for all the festivals and involved.
That's like two different worlds.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, from where you live and South
Yeah. When you do like suburban Lafayette High kind of like life and then come over to UL.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I guess I'll say we used to watch, I don't know, so many movies.
Yeah.
What do you think... I mean, horribly easy question, but what do you think is maybe like the most influential movie that like you'd seen that maybe kind of like sparked anything in you to
You know what?
Write?
I'm going to pivot that because once I saw a certain TV show, I was obsessed with TV.
Okay.
And I kind of stopped watching movies.
Which one?
I still like movies, but I really love television. It was Lost. I watched Lost and I was like a freshman or sophomore in high school. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you, I could not stop watching Lost. Like, my mom used to punish me from Lost. Like, she'd be like, you have... And this was back in the day when, like, streaming wasn't really a thing. So I was hunched over our family computer in the living room with headphones in and, like, at abc.go.com watching Lost over and over and over again. And I just, like, fell in love with the storytelling of that show. And I think a lot of people would agree that, like, Lost has really changed the game in television in a lot of different ways. And I also became obsessed with binge watching things, you know, because they were on season four when I was a freshman in high school. So it was like, I watched four seasons in like a month and my mom.
It's very impressive.
Yeah. So I think that really did everything for me. I owe it a lot to that show.
That show was awesome. We've watched all of it twice now.
Yeah.
And I want to watch it again.
Yeah. People give it a lot of flack for the ending, but I have it on DVD. I have the box set, by the way, at my mom's house, so we could go this weekend and pick it up.
Okay.
I'm in the minority because I loved the ending.
Oh, yeah?
I thought it was really good.
I was like, I was fine about it. So it's been a while. I should rewatch it. But it gets a lot of flack, and I don't think it's that bad.
Well, I think the point of the ending was it's not about the ending. Yeah. It's about the journey that you took.
Yeah.
And all the little storylines. That's what the ending told me. Was, yeah. It's not about this. It's about everything else that you just saw.
That's kind of how I feel. It just didn't like affect my love for the show. Like I was like, oh, but I'm still watching their journey and the character development and how they told the stories on the show. I mean, you guys are going to get addicted. So
yeah, we've never seen it.
I'm nervous. It's
good.
I'm nervous.
No, it's great. But do be prepared for it to take over your life.
It will.
It can't
seriously,
not.
Seriously, the best first episode ever in television.
Okay. Taylor. That's a high bar.
It's season one, season two. I mean, it's so good.
Even the end of season one? Oh, my God.
The end of season three. For all the listeners that know what we're talking about,
yeah.
Not Penny's boat, am I right?
Oh my gosh, that was amazing.
I know, all of it.
Okay, well now I have to watch it, obviously.
We have to go back. I mean, there's so many things. Spoiler alerts. You're not going to remember this.
Let's just put on the projector in the room over there and we'll just start watching it.
It's fine.
We can create a new podcast and we'll just like talk about Lost.
There we go.
Episode at a time.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a million of those podcasts, probably. Though. But
never too many.
So Discovering Lafayette or Discovering Lost.
Yes.
Choose your adventure.
Or choose both.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have any other questions, Taylor? I know you...
I guess what's the hardest and easiest part about working for yourself? Quotation marks.
Yeah, it's good that you talked about that. Yeah, it's a good question. So I am... People ask me this all the time. They're like, are you freelance? Like, how does someone pay you? Like, so it's... The way you could think about it is being like an entrepreneur. So I have my own business. I'm incorporated. And I have like a lawyer and like all this other stuff. I know you have to have when you have a business. Yeah. And so I kind of make work for myself and I have to be smart in a lot of ways because I kind of get paid in like lump sums basically.
Right.
So it's not like I don't get paid biweekly or anything like that. You have to be smart in that regard about money, and you also have to be smart about time because also life's a little bit of a balance. So I thought I was going to work this week and then I didn't have anything pressing. I didn't have anything due. I had some things I had to do last week and to turn in and I worked on the plane when I was flying down here, or flying down to Houston actually for a bit, but this week I just didn't have anything urgent. But that's sort of the ebb and flow.
That's really nice, though. Yeah.
Yin and yang of great. Like, because there are some times when I'm working like a mad person and all I'm thinking about is the story that I have to crack and the script that I have to write. And,
like dreaming about it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So like everything is in service to that. And so then sometimes you go on vacation. And
you like vacation. I look on Facebook and you're a world traveler.
I do. Well, that was a big part of like being so excited to work for myself, to create my own schedule. I have a travel website.
You do?
Yeah, I do.
What is it?
It's CassieFinds.com. It's also my Instagram handle if you want to follow me. Finds, FINDS.
So you have to travel.
Yeah.
It's a job.
Well, no one pays me to travel. I'll
you don't
want to
let
that.
Your followers down, Cassie.
I kind of started it. I always wanted to do it. I love photography. I've always been really interested in photography, and I have like my DSLR, my GoPro, and I'm always like snapping pics and making videos when I travel. And I also have so many friends that come to me and they're like, what can you send me your itinerary when you go to Rome, like when I go to Rome or something like that. So it's partially inspired by getting annoyed by having to do that all the time. So now I can just go, just go to CassieFinds.com/Rome.
Read the
and then
syllabus,
you can find my itinerary. So it's also just a creative outlet that I just like to do because I designed the whole thing myself from scratch, which was fun. And I get to showcase all my pictures and videos and just share, what I did. And basically the format is I literally just go day by day what I do there. So it's my entire itinerary. And then I give a recommendation. So some of it, it's like, don't do it. It's like, I did it for you. So you can know not to do it. And then other things are like, you have to do this, those kind of experiences. So it's just a fun creative outlet that is a really big passion in my life. And I'm really grateful that the career that I've always dreamed of and would love to do really allows me to have that sort of travel time and that experience.
I'm glad too, because you love what you're doing. It's so obvious.
I mean, I don't know. I'm not sure if I have too much else.
Have I asked you? I know Jason's going to have a few questions in a second. Have I asked you what you thought I would ask? Did I miss something obvious that you want to share?
Sometimes people ask about like the actual writing process, but I don't know if you're curious about that.
Yeah,
why don't you share that?
So basically the answer is that it varies. I'm sure that's not surprising. Because sometimes you get ideas mm-hmm. in different ways. I'll tell you, with Christmas, having written a lot now, because I've actually written 6.
Wow.
Well, I know, because they do stuff so early, so I've already submitted mm-hmm. stuff for 2020. So it's like, I know, it's crazy. And I actually wrote, I'm getting good at writing Christmas scripts. I wrote one of the scripts for 2020 in 4 days.
Are you serious?
That's wild, though. Yeah.
That's amazing.
That's, like, not common, but I just got tired of it being on my to-do list, so I just worked mm-hmm. really hard. But a lot of times with Christmas movies, I get inspired by titles. Because, you know, if you notice, like, if you look at, like, Hallmark, Lifetime, mm-hmm. Netflix, all the Christmas titles are very Christmassy. You know, it says The Christmas Contract, you know, A Christmas in Tennessee, you know, The Road Home for Christmas. So I come up with titles, and it's, like, you know, it's pretty obvious what they're about. Like the ones this year, The Road Home for Christmas, they're going on a road trip. Mm. And so it's two rival piano dueling musicians.
Of course.
Awesome. Yes. So, and of course I had to throw in a little Louisiana flair. So they're New Orleans based musicians and they do like a piano dueling show in the quarter. Mm. And basically they have a gig on Christmas Eve that cancels. And so they find out that they're from a similar, you know, a close hometown in Ohio.
Okay.
So they decide to road trip there. So I just thought that'd be fun to write like a road trip movie. And mm-hmm. especially when I'm sure a lot of people have driven this route. I know I have, going from New Orleans, they go up through Mississippi to Nashville.
Oh, fun.
And then up through Louisville and mm-hmm. then to Ohio.
That's a beautiful drive.
So, yeah, and so it starts off, like, kind of green, and then it gets snowy as they get
up. Oh, I love that.
There's some, like, country Christmas music going on.
Pretty
scenery. It's a good one. Yeah, I like that. That's October 26th. Mm-hmm. And it'll be playing all season long on mm-hmm. Lifetime. So if you don't catch it, then you can find it again. And then Radio Christmas is the same way. I just like the title of it, and I like the idea of a radio, like a person that works for like a Sirius XM type of show, mm-hmm. Where it's Christmas all year long. And so you sort of see like the months go by. In the beginning, there's like a montage of months of mm-hmm. like it's July,
that.
It's August. It's
that's kind of fun. Like
yeah. TV shows are a little different. Like when I write a pilot, those are more concept premise based. So I have this idea. I just wrote a pilot that I'm really excited about. And I didn't really know much of what I wanted it to be about. I just knew I wanted it to be set in an ancient fictional city.
Okay.
And that I wanted it to follow the women and to see how their actions have shaped the country's you know, history
and
political landscape.
Okay.
So that's premise based. So it really kind of mm-hmm. changes like what you want to do.
You know, and I had just assumed, and this is from ignorance, that I know I've read about other writers, like even John Lennon, and they would just be inspired by a poster or something. I just assumed you just would have things, you're attracting these ideas. And then the hard part is probably sitting down to just flesh it out, because you probably could write the,
you know, I mean, that's
a synopsis in a paragraph, mm-hmm. but to get to flesh it out to be a full length show is probably the tough part.
I think, Taylor, you can relate to this as an artist mm-hmm. as well. You get ideas and you want to do them. And sometimes it's like you have to make yourself do what mm-hmm. you love. It's a weird thing.
No,
it's
really
a weird
do. I have
thing.
To keep my art stuff out. Because if not, if it's in boxes, I'll forget about it. But if it's at your fingertips and always at the ready, you're mm-hmm. you know, more inclined.
Because there were years when I did that too. I had all this list of like, oh, I want to write this. I want to write this. And I wasn't doing it. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of the mm-hmm. the hump, the biggest hump as a creative, you know, person, whether you're writing or doing art or whatever. It's really just like making yourself follow through on your ideas.
Yeah.
Because you can have a million ideas, but if you're not able to do it, then what use is mm-hmm. it? So, no, you're absolutely right. It is hard to flesh them out.
Yeah.
Have you ever had a dream that inspired anything before?
Absolutely. You know me.
I mean,
my dreams are crazy. They're wild.
It's a crazy Christmas.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Nothing for Christmas that's ever inspired me, but
lucid dream Christmas.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my gosh, yes, a lucid dream. A dream of Christmas.
Oh.
That's probably mm-hmm. already a movie.
I like that.
But yeah, lots of stuff. Music also. Music always helps, you know.
Yeah.
For
brings back memories too.
Absolutely.
Would you ever like write some sort of like Disney themed kind of like, not like, I guess like kiddie movie? Or you, I mean, obviously you said you want to do more drama, but like, I know how much you love Disney. We sang Be a Man karaoke last night.
Yes.
So I mean, I don't know. Would you ever?
I definitely, so I don't know about Disney, like I don't know about a Disney movie, but I love musicals to death. You know this.
Yes.
And I would love to, I'm currently, not actively, but currently we're working on musicals that I'm writing.
Oh.
So I do book and lyrics.
That's
so,
exciting.
Yeah. So that's a long-term goal though. So I have, and I'm like very particular about musicals. I feel like musicals take, you need to at least have 7 years before it can be on Broadway. Otherwise they're really bad. It's like a whole thing. Like there's so many Broadway musicals that make it, just because of like who it is, you know, who's making it or whatever. And it's, the process is rushed and they're not good. So that's a long-term goal that I'm really excited about as well. That's going to happen.
So
it has
fun.
To happen.
That's exciting.
I know. I just love Broadway. So that's another reason I live in New York.
I was about to say, you go all the time, correct?
Yeah, all the time. Like I see everything. I just saw Moulin Rouge with the original cast. It's amazing.
Was it fantastic?
Absolutely. I mean, that's a movie that I think I've watched a million times.
Like they had the elephant and like all the...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
And like the opening number of the musical is... Because we can. And I just started crying.
Yes.
I was like, oh, I don't know. I was like, because it's a fun song. It's not, obviously, it's not sad if you've seen the movie. But the nostalgia I had attached to the movie, I just started crying.
Yeah. I think we've watched Moulin Rouge at least five times in our
Absolutely. I love that movie. And so it's a great musical, which Broadway needed. There's some bad ones right now, but
we won't name them.
I think, but Moulin, it's coming to New Orleans, by the way. I think like in 2020.
Good to know.
Gift opportunities. Yeah.
Yeah. Chris. Yeah. Think about Christmas presents. Who in your life enjoys musicals, enjoys Moulin Rouge.
Fun.
Yeah. But that's another reason I think I live in New York over LA. I go to LA a few times a year, four or something like that. And because like a lot of the industry is all there.
Yeah.
But I just love New York.
It's what a great setting. I remember whenever we were there around Thanksgiving, I got to see you and hang out with you, and we went out, and then coming home, like being on the subway with you, and just like
hanging out.
Knew all the letters everywhere they went,
and we would be stressed out.
I was freaking out.
I should hope so. It's been like 5 years.
I know, but it was like the coolest moment, just seeing you so in your element and in your town, and I was like, this is amazing, because like
I mean, but I love like
we're messes, and you were so on top of your stuff.
So, but that's what I also love about having such a flexible schedule is like I come to Lafayette like a fair bit.
You really,
I do.
Yeah.
Often because my parents live here, my friends live here, and there's always a good reason to come to Lafayette. There's never a bad reason.
That's true.
So
discover Lafayette.
I've never missed a Festival International.
ever.
I've come back every single year. I'll miss Mardi Gras, but I won't miss Festival International. It's the best thing ever.
I understand.
And so I come back like fairly often, and I'm just like miss trees and the food, and I'm like, ready. It's scary sometimes because I'm like, okay, I have to eat here, 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 and here, and I have to do it in 2 days.
Tough task.
So it's nice to have that balance of like going from a big city that I love, and then being able to come home and like go kayaking in like Martin.
You can just appreciate it so much.
Yeah, absolutely. And I come home enough where, like, I don't know, it feels like my friends are like, I see you more than I do my other friends sometimes who live here.
Yeah, for real.
That's probably true.
Yeah.
Well,
but I also rally people. I'm like, we're gonna do ladies night and stuff like
no
like
question.
We did last night.
Didn't even care where we went.
Yeah. I love it.
Well, Cassie, we're here, as we mentioned earlier, in Raider Solutions. We're grateful for the help that Jason Sikora gives us in taping the show. And I know you've been in the industry, and I know you probably have some questions.
Well, first of all, Cassie, thank you for being here and for taking time to come do this. This has been
so
awesome.
Excited.
And it was so fun to listen to your story. And then I got super excited when I
mentioned Lost.
Well, Lost certainly, yes, of course.
Yeah.
But no, to hear the parallels between what you went through in getting where you are to what I did in the music business.
Right.
And yeah, you rough it for a couple of years.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden there's a break and the floodgates just open.
Yeah.
And you start meeting people that meet other people.
Yeah.
And I never had a business card and I was never without work.
Yeah.
Right. So it just it just happens. But you have to push.
We're in the people business, really.
My interview for the Britney Spears gig was the manager said, come hang out with me at a bar. And we hung out for 3 hours and I said, so are you gonna interview me? And he goes, no, I like you. I can live on a bus with you. You have a gig.
Exactly.
Like, really? He never asked me about my skills. He just like, can we get along?
Yeah.
And that was it. I got super excited so many times when you were telling your story. So you mentioned, I'm going to jump around here. What's your favorite DSLR camera?
I use a Canon, but my Canon isn't, well, it's a 60D, but like, who wouldn't want like a Mark II? I don't have a Mark II, but like.
Yeah, I still have an old Canon Rebel. But
Yeah.
And we just got a new Rebel, I think, T7i here in the office just to goof around with.
Totally.
So you said that you wrote a script in 4 days.
Yeah, I know. It's stupid.
Which seems crazy, but that was one of my questions was how long does it typically take? And I know you say it varies, but like on average.
I would say to write a movie, like 5 weeks. If you push yourself, you work every day. If it's your full-time job. If you have like stuff to do in life, it might take longer. But that's like I think a pretty reasonable time, time frame to give yourself to write a movie from scratch. It still is a lot of work and you have to work at it every day, but that's reasonable. 4 days is a little silly.
So does that include, like, I'd imagine there's rewrites as well?
Right, that doesn't include the rewrite. So that's just my draft of like whenever I submit it to a network and they want to make changes, that's when the rewrites come into play. But that's why I like submitting scripts. You don't have to submit scripts technically. You can submit ideas, treatments, those kind of things.
Oh, interesting.
Well, when you're an established writer, so when they know that you can write a movie, basically, like I don't have to do it at this point. They know me well enough. But I like doing a script. I think you get to put your whole idea first and you get to say, this is my vision, where they can make changes along the way. If you just give them a treatment or a summary, that's what that means. Then they can edit it in the outlining process and change your vision. I just really like the idea of like putting like, okay, this is what I have. If you want to change stuff, that's great. Like we can change things, but this was what I have to offer you.
Yeah. Are you paid differently if it's just like an idea versus a full manuscript?
Script? If they're only purchasing the idea from you, yeah. But if you're writing the movie, no.
Same thing.
I mean, you have to be smart.
Yeah.
And a little bit of a boss. when negotiating, I've learned that. There's a little bit of ageism in this industry, more than sexism. There's some sexism, for sure.
What?
But I found there's a lot more ageism. But people are pretty overt about ageism, so.
makes sense.
Like, hey, kiddo.
So, yeah, I'm like, I'm writing a movie. You still have to pay me like a normal writer.
So as part of your process, do you have like a favorite part of it? Is it like getting ideas? Is it the writing, fleshing things out? Is it like... like, what really drives you and makes you excited when writing a script?
That's the feeling of finishing a script, honestly. I think that's what propels you. Like, it feels so good to finish a script, especially when you get to the end and it's sort of the fun part where I don't always write things in order. So, like, you get an idea for a scene and I might know what's going to happen, but I don't know, I know what A and C are, but I don't know what B is, that kind of thing. So, when you're at the end and it's, like, filled in, you're like, I have a beginning, I have an end, I have most of the middle, and you just have to fill in the fun things and you get new ideas.
Interesting.
Or like you can put in a smaller storyline at the very end or just little details about like originally this is a good concept. And the Christmas contract, I did not figure out what the maze was, and it was bugging me. So if you remember at the end of the movie, there's this Christmas tree maze that she goes through and he like tells their love story through the ornaments. I hadn't thought of that. So I wrote most of the movie without that in mind.
So sweet.
So basically, and then it was like, oh, wait, I can make the mom a homemade ornament maker. And so I changed her profession or her little craft to being an ornament shop and said I had a pecan shop.
Love it.
Shout out to the Bowers family.
Obviously.
A classic golden
pecans.
And so, so it's like those kind of, when those things come together, especially at the end, it just feels so satisfying to like put everything together and make ideas. So.
Nice. Now I like that. So I've released a bunch of music, and when writing music, depending on what you're doing and what kind of style it is, there's just certain things that you do, like verse, pre-chorus, chorus, back to a verse. Maybe there's a breakdown, another chorus. Is writing still kind of like that, where there's three separate acts, or is it not really that way anymore?
So that's how they sometimes teach it. They definitely did back in the day. They taught it three-act structure for movies, but there's so many theories these days. Like, I've heard of a 7-act structure. I've heard of, I don't even care about acts. I don't think about that. So,
oh,
and
really? Okay.
In the TV movie world, they're technically 9 acts, but those are just based on commercial breaks. They're not actually story beats, really, totally. I don't even think about that. I have my own way of thinking about things. So you have your inciting incident, right? That's sort of what propels your movie. That's in any kind of English storytelling perspective. I call it your all is lost moment. And that's sort of like right before, you know, the end, basically. I have like a page number. Like usually it's in the 60s. Maybe it's in the 70s. And like that's when everything goes to... it goes bad.
It tugs. Tugs on the heartstrings.
Yeah, things are going wrong. You're throwing all the bad stuff at your characters, especially in a Christmas film. It would be like, there's a snowstorm and we can't be home together anymore. Yeah. And we should break up because we live in two different cities. Like, these are like, you shove all the bad stuff. And then you have like your resolution. And then along the way, there's lots of little things. But when I start writing a script, I have to know the inciting incident. I have to know the all is lost moment. And I have to know how everything's going to resolve.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So, I think that's kind of all you need, and you get to know your characters, and then you can start. It's fine.
That's so cute.
Awesome. I like that. Is that kind of how most writers do it, or is that just kind of your thing?
I think everyone's very different, because I am also weird. I write out of order. So I might write... the beginning usually I write first, but then after the beginning, it's like, who knows what I'm going to write next.
Got you.
So I think some people are really obsessed with outlines. So some people like to be very particular about what their story is before they write it. But I don't like that. My creativity isn't like
works
that.
Works better for you.
Yeah. When I just like, I kind of let the, this sounds so cheesy and like hippie ethereal, but like I kind of let the writer, like the characters like, tell me their story.
That means they're fully fleshed out
in a
characters.
Weird way. I know it sounds stupid.
They talk to you.
It sounds stupid, but sometimes when I'm writing dialogue, they'll just say something, and it's like something that I wasn't planning on writing into the script. I'm like, oh, well, maybe there is this going to happen, like, or maybe it already happened, or I don't know. It sounds dumb, but it's...
No, I
love it. I
like it, yeah.
I was hoping you'd say that. That's what I pictured, just it's coming to you.
Yeah.
There, you know, it comes to
me
with,
like, a bottle of whiskey and like,
in the dark.
I'm like, tell me your story, character.
And well, write it down.
Well, no, I think that's a great response, because, again, music's the same way.
Yeah, like, sometimes it goes, and it's like and forth. Like sometimes you're pushing it, and other times it's coming from you, and you don't even know what's happening.
I'll grab a guitar in here and just start playing something, and then all of a sudden, like, there's a song.
Yeah,
how did this happen?
Yeah,
pure crazy talent. Yeah.
And sometimes I feel like you can relate to this, like, also as a musician. There are some projects I've written, and you're like chugging through, and it takes forever.
Yeah.
And there's some projects when I'm like, whoa, how did I do that all in one day? Like, you know, it's, and the same thing with music. I think those are creative processes are always so different, and you can never pin it down exactly. So you just have to be okay with it.
There's been songs I've rewritten 5 times because I just struggled. And then the best ones are the ones that I wrote in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
So it's probably the same. Your 4-day script is probably fantastic.
Yeah.
Because it just came to you so fast.
Yeah. Exactly.
So that's awesome. Well, again, thank you for being here.
Yeah.
This has been an awesome podcast.
Awesome.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm so happy to be here.
Thank you, Jan.
Jason Sikora with Raider Solutions. Thank you again for making our show possible. And Cassie Doyle. And Taylor Swift.
Taylor Swift.
Been fun. Gosh, you know, I love doing the podcast, but it really came to life today. Just thinking back about your journey and where you are right now, I just feel like the sky's the limit for you. So congratulations
on
success and continued success. And I want to thank our listeners for the support of our podcast. The numbers are growing. I'm very proud of being able to share the stories of Lafayette, Louisiana, and South Louisiana. So it's a real pleasure to be here. I want to thank our sponsors, Raider Solutions, Iberia Bank, and Lafayette General. You can find this episode and all of our episodes on discoverlafayette.net, or even better, you can go to Apple Podcasts or anywhere you get your podcast and subscribe, and you'll get a new edition delivered to your phone or computer every Friday morning. So on behalf of Discover Lafayette, this is Jan Swift.